Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And today, I'm going to be reviewing an audiobook that I finished yesterday, and it's called Emperor Mollusk versus the Sinister Brain. The front cover looks pretty good. He came, he squirmed, he conquered. A novel by A. Lee Martinez, who I don't think I've read any novels by A. Lee Martinez before, or not that I remember. It's a comedy, science fiction, fantasy slash swashbuckling, pulpy adventure kind of story. And yeah, it's one of those books where you could read it and go, oh, this is going to be a lot of fun. And it mostly was fun. However, it's... It says here, published in, what does it say here? First published in January 1st, 2012, hardcover, 293 pages, and it's about 7.5 hours long as the audiobook. Unfortunately, the book itself, the story itself, is probably about a 5-hour audiobook, so there was a kind of middle section where I was like, okay, this is dragging a bit, and I'll explain the reasons why. The setup is that Mollusk was a warlord. Emperor Mollusk was a warlord. He took over Earth. This is all like explained in like the opening chapter or the opening two chapters. He takes over the world and comes from Neptune. Every different planet has different people on it. There's there's Neptunians and Venusians and Plutoniums, and all of these different planets have different races from them. People from Saturn, people from Jupiter, and Mollusk is like an octopus brain, he's like a massive brain inside an octopus body, which is then inside an exoskeleton suit, mechanical exosuit, and then that's it. Then he flies around in a flying saucer in Earth, and that's it. So by using mind control, takes over the Earth, takes over Terra, after being kicked out of or wanted for crimes against all of the other planets, causing troubles across the solar system. And once he's taken over Earth, sort of goes, right, that's good, people are worshipping me like God, like a god now, and I've solved world hunger, and starting to solve disease, there's no more wars, solved the energy crisis on Earth and stuff like that. Now what have I got to do? And so now pretty much he defends Earth from threats from the outside. And there's some fun statistics kind of mentioned in the book that like 70% of all the threats that he has to defend Earth from, and all the things that like other, you know, even mega villains that come along, they only can come along because he himself is there. It's sort of like 72% of all of the things, all the crises that you have saved Earth from were caused or a byproduct of your own actions in the first place. He says, well, you know, there's a pretty good track record, the 30% that wasn't caused by me, I guess I'm doing a good job. So that's kind of the setup for the book. So an evil villain guy with a big mind who loves building doomsday devices and weapons. That's his main hobby, is making weapons and doomsday devices out of just everyday materials, and looking into the deep dark depths of science to find other ways to destroy the galaxy, destroy planets, to destroy all of that, but not using them, just kind of like locking them away. And he has all these different vaults around Earth where he locks away his technology. He's got lots of flying saucers, he keeps them all around the world. Lots of exosuit backups and things. So if anything, if he needs anything, he can just call it over. And and any bad, like really bad doomsday weapons, he hides around the place. So the book begins with him battling in space a clone of himself in orbit, and he goes onto a spaceship and he's sort of like, ah, who are you? Ah, I'm another Neptunian. Looks very much like me. I guess it is me, it's a clone, I guess the clone was a bad idea. He says, I don't often make mistakes, but when I do, I'm okay to admit to the mistakes that I do make. The clone was probably a bad idea. And so, weirdly enough, it says right in that first chapter, I remember right in that first chapter, it said, the clone, what you did is that you left lots of decoys around for me. You distracted me by leaving a series of clues for me to take me around across the globe. I went to Lisbon and went to other cities, and I was tracking these different clues and different decoys that you left for me around the world to distract you, this is the clone saying, distract you from where the real doomsday weapon was going to be. or is being built, or whatever's going on like that. And so after he defeats his clone in Chapter 1, it pretty much then repeats that. He then goes on a tour of the world, following clues for reasons which wouldn't have been exactly clear, except we already kind of know the MO of what's going on. He's sort of, is he being distracted? What's going on here? Who is distracting him? Who has learnt this trick about distracting him by saying, oh, there's a trap here. Oh, there's some clues here. Oh, there's other things here. And so that's what he does. So this whole book becomes a tour of different places. We're in outer space. We're in a city. We go to Atlantis. There's some flashbacks to some other places like Kansas. Then we go to a dinosaur island in Antarctica and the Fountain of Life and all these different interesting exotic places. And we meet, you know, Atlanteans and other different races which we are shared with on Earth. Because this whole thing is kind of like an alternate dimension Earth, alternate history Earth, where, of course, you know, all the swashbuckling planets, the, you know, the planetary romance kind of things like Barsoom and Venus and all these other places have all these different races in them. So at the beginning of the 20th century, when, you know, astronomy got good enough that they could you know, look at Mars and see that there were Martians there, and look at Venus and see there were Venusians there, those kind of things are just introduced, and that's just the way it works. And yes, of course, Atlantis existed, and there's a you know, all these different, there's the mole people underneath the world as well, all that kind of stuff. So what we then do is have, like, as explained in Chapter 1, oh, we go on a tour following clues around, and that's it. And that's for, like, what most of the book needs to be, or that's what most of the book is. And it became a little bit too episodic, sort of like, oh, now we're going to go here, and we're going to fight this kind of big monster, or this kind of big robot, and then discover a new clue, and then go to the next one. And like I say, this is a 7.5 hour audiobook, and about 5 of those hours is this tour around the planet, with a few flashbacks here and there, and with fun character moments, but it just felt a little bit too long and dragging in that middle part. Of course, this is, it says, you know, the title of the book, Emperor Mollusk versus the Sinister Brain. The Sinister Brain is introduced quite early. It is the face of the enemy, but is it really the enemy, or is there a final enemy behind the enemy? Is it the final boss? We're not quite sure. And then he is accompanied along the way by a few different characters, mainly Zala, who is from Venus, and she is his bodyguard in this book. She's actually kind of not meant to be the bodyguard. She's there to take him into, to arrest him and take him into custody as soon as he leaves Earth, because she's, so she doesn't want him to die, because he has to face justice on Venus. So once that's good, so the whole book is pretty much, I mean, like, of course there's the main plot driving along, what are all these clues, who is behind the, whose brain is behind the sinister brain, what's going on there, but also, like, the main story, the main subplot, I guess, is Zala, the lizard woman with a sword and guns and a squad of Venusian soldiers with her, sort of like what they get up to together. She's there for him to talk to and to explain problems to. She's there to be, you know, make snide comments back and be sarcastic back and kind of say, oh, I didn't think you were like this. Oh, what is going on here? So their relationship is kind of the main, it's the kind of the backbone of the book, like the main character journey. Unfortunately, it didn't really pay off in ways that I was really hoping for or expecting. I thought their relationship would become a lot more equal and, you know, it might have gone in a different direction, but it didn't really go that way. I thought by the end, sort of like, oh, he will understand that her kind of humanity, even though she's from Venus, but her humanity will balance out his, you know, evil genius technological science doomsday weapon expertness, and between the two of them they will kind of solve the final problem. But in the end, it's just him and she's just there coming along for the ride, even at the end. And I thought it was a little bit of a missed opportunity to have kind of like some good character development between the two of them. Also, there's Gronk, a Jupiter savage who now lives on Dinosaur Island, which is quite fun, and Snarg, which is the Ultrapede, which is this, I'm not really sure where the Ultrapede comes from, but it's an almost indestructible centipede, massive centipede thing, which helps Mollusk get out of scrapes and eats enemies and is generally a fun kind of sidekick, like the Disney sidekick, which is the animal which doesn't really speak, that kind of thing, but also eats people and stuff like that. So what we have is generally a fun, mostly fun, interesting comedy romp space adventure tour around Earth, this alternate Earth where all of the pulpy 1930s, 1920s science fiction tropes are all real. They all exist. All of the different places that you think exist, exist. All of the different technologies that could exist, exist. So that's a lot of it. However, because it relies so much on the tropes and the different plays on the tropes, I was always waiting for that big turn of like, okay, what's going to happen now? Where is it going to go for this to go into new territory? And for me, it never really did anything new. It was always amusing. The characters were always fun to spend time with, but it never really like transcended what the like normal tropes are. What the normal? I mean, there was some kind of aliens that I'd not seen before, some different biological things that I'd not seen before, some different technologies that I'd not seen before, but they were never used in a way which wasn't just, oh, big bad enemy that has to be defeated in some way, oh, big bad weapon that has to be defeated in some way. There was never really anything there which felt genuine and new. And the worst thing is that even the story felt a little bit derivative, because I was thinking, haven't I, you know, read this story before? And then I realized, no, I haven't read the story, but I've seen the story before because I've seen the movie Megamind, which is where an evil villain whose superpower is building amazing weapons and doomsday devices ends up changing his heart and ends up defending the city, or the planet in this case, in this book, but instead of wanting to rule it, and there's sort of like some other troubles that he invented, he's created himself, he has to defend against them. And I was like, yeah, this just feels to me very much like lots of movies that I've seen where the bad evil menace turns out to be, oh, actually he has a heart after all and wants to look after the planet and becomes the defender of the city or the defender of the planet instead of the person who should be worshipped and the person who's taken over due to evil scheming. And And so, actually, I was just on the Goodreads. I just looked on the Goodreads page and I did a search for Megamind, and it seems like other people have noticed the same thing. Emperor Mollusk is a hilarious character. This book kept reminding me of the movie Megamind with Will Ferrell, and I'm sure you can guess why if you've seen it. Highly recommended, by the way. And somebody else said, it's like a smarter version of the movie Megamind, a quick, fun read. And, yeah, so other people have noticed this before. But there are a few other things which kind of like you think, oh, that would be interesting that the Eiffel Tower is actually a big transmitter kind of thing, and it was built back in the day, and we were told it was for the Paris exhibition or whatever it was, the World Expo in Paris, and then it became a transmission, a radio and television transmission thing, and it was always a tourist destination, but actually there's a hidden purpose, and it is actually used for dot, 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 dot. And I was like, all right, okay, that could be good. But also in the movie Tomorrow World, that's exactly the same plot point. What was it called? Anyway, the one with George Clooney and stuff like that. Now, of course, I think that movie came out after this book was written. But again, it just sort of felt like, oh, that felt a little bit too, I don't know. A little bit. I've seen lots of things before about the Eiffel Tower being, you know, some you know, scientific experiment popping out of the ground. Or it must, they couldn't have built that whole thing just for you know, as a tourist attraction or just as a whatever. There must be some nefarious reasons underneath it. But yeah, it again, a lot of the ideas, like I say, a lot of the story, a lot of the character development, a lot of the side characters, a lot of the other ideas. It just felt a little bit there was no core to this book which I felt was original in a way which made me really satisfied with the book. Again, if it had been a bit shorter, I'd have been like, oh, that's fine because it's just a fun romp, it's just a quick romp. But in the end, it did feel like it was a dragging a bit. Which brings me to, actually, let me have a look on my notes now because I did make some notes here as well. I want to make a note of the narration. I listened to this as an audiobook. Scott Aiello narrated it, and it's a really good narration, because if you want to think about what a first person narrative from the point of view of an evil villain Neptunian Megamind is going to be, this really sums it up. It's a very kind of like well pronounced, clipped English, high-class English accent. It's sort of like, oh, yes, I do believe I would go with it. But it's sort of like that same kind of fun movie, 1930s British movie villain. Oh, I say 1930s, but, you know, that kind of pulpy era movie villain clipped English accent. And it really worked for me. And I think a lot of the book actually came from the performance of this. It's full of jokes. It's full of fun ideas, fun characters doing stupid things and battling against each other in different ways. And like I say, a lot of the enjoyment came out of those jokes being told from... let's see if there's actually a quote. There's normally quotes on the side of the Goodreads.com page. It says, do these robots look armed? And I was talking to the dinosaur. Were you worried he would disgust me to death? Oh, actually, not a very funny quote. Anyway, robots, dinosaurs, aliens, everything is just kind of thrown into this book. And what else was I going to say? Yeah, the pacing was a bit weird. No, I've already said that. Just had another thought in my brain, but it's already gone. It's already gone out of my brain. I don't have a mega mind. I'm not an evil, a sinister brain of my own. I can't keep all of these thoughts in my head. Should have made more notes. Let me look back, scroll back up my notes again. Nope, I don't really have anything else to say. Wow, another short review of a book which was mostly doing it for me, but never really pulled it together. Again, there wasn't a moment I wasn't being entertained, but there were many moments I was being bored by the story. Like, the writing was always there, the narration was great, the comedy was good, but again, just the whole thing didn't really hold together. As a novella, it might have worked, but as a 7-hour audiobook, it didn't really come together. Although I really did like Snarg, I like Zala, and Mollusk himself was very interesting. What else was I going to say? Oh yeah, human brains in jars felt a bit Futurama. Again, it's just like I don't want to just list all the things that this book reminded me of. I just wanted it to transcend its references, transcend its influences, transcend the pulpiness behind it, and it never really got there. And the ending, again, don't want to do any spoilers, but the ending, I was sort of like, oh, okay, kind of saw, see what you're going for there. I kind of worked out a lot of that earlier on, and then the way it was actually resolved wasn't as satisfying from a character point of view as I was hoping for. Right, I think that's about it. Don't really have anything else to say about it. You can follow me on... Oh, no. Tell you what, let's have a look what other people, my friends, think about this on goodreads.com. Paul rated it 4 stars. Very entertaining. It was hard to put down. Good choice if you're looking for something light and off the wall. Ziven rated it 5 stars. Okay, 5 stars is a bit much, but this is the best A. Lee Martinez book I've read so far. I'm giving it 4.5 stars. Think of the alien from Monsters vs. Aliens, which I've not seen. Slightly more competent and well more grown up version of him as the main character. This was a very good laugh during a stressful week. Sandy rated it 3 stars. I generally like A. Lee Martin's work. However, this one was too episodic for my taste. It jumped from one scene to the next and felt like a bunch of disconnected stories. Martinez's signature humour is there, but I had trouble with the story. Hey, almost exactly the same as my review. Scott Alio did a terrific job in narrating. There was some real pathos in his voice as Mollusk talks about retiring as an evil warlord. He gets the character's smugness right too. Yeah, that's true. That is one thing I do quite like about this book, is that there is a little bit of self-reflection from an even evil villain. And like I say, some of my favourite character moments was Zala kind of confronting him about this. It's sort of like, oh, you're not... Yeah, sort of like sometimes like, oh, you're not always evil. Sometimes you do look out for good people. It's like, yeah, it's kind of bored being a bit evil. Oh, you're not always... Sort of like, so the Zala Mollusk interaction, sort of like, oh, you're not always infallible. Sometimes you don't succeed. And the way that those interactions and those stories, which actually come just like about an hour before the end of the book, or maybe an hour and a half before the end of the book, and like I say, felt like it was, you know, hinting at something more interesting to come. But in the end, that ending didn't come. Right, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm Alec Burge. Become my friend on Goodreads.com, which is the way I know which books you've enjoyed. This book has got a 3.79 rating overall in friends reviews, 3.67, so you know, pretty good. I'm giving this book 3.5 stars, I guess, which is a sort of like, yeah, okay kind of recommendation. Not an unreserved recommendation, but yeah, guess you could read this. So join up with the SFBRP listener group and post books that you would like to see me or hear me review. on there on the thread. Books I would like to see reviewed. That's probably the best way to get me to read one of your favourite books, or maybe a book that you don't like and you want me to rant about, but don't tell me you just want to rant. And if other people back up your recommendations and says, yes, me too, also would like to see that book reviewed, that's the best way to do it. You can follow me on Instagram too. I'm at Luke Burridge there. YouTube, at Luke Burridge there, or slash Luke Burridge there. And you check out sfbrp.com. And there you'll find the entire archives. There's a page called Episode List, and you can see back through the previous 350 episodes, all listed out there, all the books, all the authors. You can sort them by title and series and episode length and star rating and all of those other kind of things. So check it out at sfbrp.com. That's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.